Imagine discovering your vibrant teenager has been secretly skipping meals, exercising obsessively at night, or purging after dinner. What was once dismissed as a phase now threatens their life. This nightmare scenario unfolds in thousands of homes annually, yet many parents feel powerless against eating disorders. The revolutionary approach developed by Locke and LaGrange challenges the traditional practice of excluding parents from recovery, instead positioning families as the primary healing force. This method, known as the Maudsley approach, has transformed eating disorder treatment worldwide. Why does this matter so deeply? Because eating disorders have the highest mortality rate of any mental illness. They're not choices or phases. They're serious medical conditions that progressively worsen without intervention. When your child develops an eating disorder, every instinct tells you to help. Yet traditional treatment approaches often push parents away precisely when their children need them most. What if, instead, your parental knowledge, love, and determination became the most powerful medicine available? Eating disorders become more entrenched weekly. Diagnosis is especially challenging for adolescents, as adult criteria often miss their unique presentation. Consider 13-year-old Susan, who claimed her 25-pound weight loss came from stomach problems, while her parents reported discarded meals and constant movement. This discrepancy makes parental perspective essential for accurate diagnosis. Standard criteria fail adolescents because weight thresholds ignore growth patterns, menstrual criteria don't apply to males or premenstrual girls, and many teens engage in dangerous behaviors while denying weight concerns. Many receive vague diagnoses that delay necessary treatment. What matters most isn't the specific diagnosis, but recognizing that all eating disorders share abnormal eating patterns, distorted attitudes about food and weight, and significant dysfunction requiring intervention. Don't wait until your child reaches an arbitrary threshold of thinness. The earlier treatment begins, the better the prognosis. Eating disorders fundamentally alter children, creating painful family dilemmas. Imagine a Venn diagram where the disorder, black circle, increasingly overlaps your child's true self, white circle, distorting their existing traits. A perfectionist becomes obsessive about calories. An anxious child fears mealtimes. A driven child redirects determination toward excessive exercise. The disorder weaponizes your child's strengths against them. Traditional treatments often exclude parents, either blaming family dynamics or expecting adolescents to battle these illnesses independently. However, these approaches lack scientific support. Most parents have other children without eating disorders, and research shows no consistent parental differences predating the illness. Parents often become paralyzed by guilt when searching for causes. Mike and Susan exemplify this, lying awake blaming themselves for emphasizing exercise, nutrition, or having fashion magazines at home. But dwelling on causation diverts energy from helping your child, and eating disorder causes remain largely unknown. The Maudsley approach offers a different perspective, positioning parents as the primary recovery resource. This approach values parents' knowledge, recognizes that eating disorders require immediate intervention, and emphasizes that parents need education to evaluate recovery progress. It maintains that parents aren't to blame. Guilt only undermines their ability to help. Instead, parents must be empowered, with the entire family contributing to recovery. Eating disorders have familial patterns with significant genetic components. Traits like perfectionism, obsessionality, and negative mood states appear heritable. Family dynamics matter too. Sam's disconnected parents missed his weight loss for weeks, while Tilly struggled between divorced parents' homes. Cultural forces play a crucial role. Media exposes children early to unrealistic body ideals through toys and entertainment. When television reached Tonga in the 1990s, eating disorders emerged where none existed before. Western beauty standards are spreading globally, particularly in Asia, with immigrants facing higher risks. The authors caution against overemphasizing causes during treatment. Like helping someone who's inebriated, you must first address the immediate condition before effective therapy can begin. Setting aside the why reduces parental guilt and positions them as effective allies in their child's recovery. Eating disorders are serious medical conditions with potentially fatal consequences. Anorexia causes complications including amenorrhea, cardiac dysfunction, brain atrophy, and bone loss. Signs include wearing extra layers in warm weather, dry skin, brittle hair growth, fatigue, and reduced exercise tolerance. Bulimia is more secretive, with sufferers typically maintaining normal weight. Medical complications remain serious: low potassium levels, esophageal tears, dehydration, and cardiac problems. 17-year-old Nora's case shows how purging led to blood in her vomit, dizziness, racing heart, and fainting, requiring emergency care. Understanding cognitive distortions is essential for recovery. These illnesses alter how teens perceive food, eating, weight, exercise, and their bodies. Recognizing these distortions helps separate the illness from the teenager, enabling more compassionate responses. Eating disorders consume sufferers completely. Even compassionate teens may seem oblivious to family crises when overtaken by anorexia. As starvation progresses, hunger paradoxically diminishes while thoughts about food and weight become all-consuming, a phenomenon documented in Ansel Keys's landmark starvation study. The success of inpatient treatment for eating disorders comes from consistent 24-hour nursing teams, a model parents must replicate at home. Creating this united front requires agreement on all aspects: problem urgency, when to seek help, communication strategies, food amounts, consequences, and even specific details like milk choices. Without tight coordination, eating disorders exploit parental differences like a fish slipping through holes in a net. When parents send mixed messages, one demanding "eat now," while another gently requests "just one more bite," they fight each other instead of the illness. Eating disorders use predictable strategies to divide parents. Divorce and complicated caregiving arrangements create particular challenges and opportunities for manipulation. When one parent handles all refeeding while another has given up, resentment builds as the active parent becomes both the bad cop and bears the entire burden. Parental agreement forms the foundation for recovery. Parents must present a unified approach from meal to meal. This unity doesn't mean never disagreeing. It means finding ways to work together productively despite differences, becoming an unbreakable force against the eating disorder. Eating disorders thrive in secrecy, convincing sufferers they must fight alone. The most powerful antidote is unwavering parental presence, not as helpless bystanders, but as active, informed participants in recovery. You know your child better than any professional ever will. This knowledge is central to treatment. Recovery doesn't require perfect understanding of why the disorder developed, but consistent, unified action to help your child eat again, one meal at a time. The journey won't be linear. There will be setbacks, resistance, even hostility. But behind the anger stands your real child, waiting to be freed from disordered thinking. By maintaining a united front, seeking appropriate professional support, while remaining your child's advocate, you create conditions where healing becomes possible. Your teenager needs you to be present, consistent, and unwavering in your commitment to their recovery, even when they push you away. In this battle, parental love is the most powerful medicine available.